Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Welcome back to Double Play. I'm Chris Clemmert here with Brandon Walker.
Yes, hello. Hi. It's good to be here, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well,
I'm working on a lot of things.
For a couple weeks, it's still our show together.
I'm here to plug everything I'm doing. Thank you for having me, man. It's good to see you. You look good. You look well.
Thank you. It's the first time I've heard that in a while.
The two movies we do today will have the highest combined score we've ever given out, I would assume.
I would assume as well.
Because these are two very good movies.
Yes, they are.
In my opinion.
I agree.
I guess you haven't told them what it is yet.
Yes, we are talking about... We're talking about the films Jerry Maguire, Tom Cruise drama that came out in 1996, as well as Air, the Matt Damon... Honestly, biopic? True.
Well, I think you're wrong in calling Jerry Maguire a drama. I think it's at least a comedy drama.
Comedy,
yeah, I think it's a comedy drama.
That's fair.
I don't think it's a full on drama because there's certainly humor to it.
There is.
And then Air, yeah, it is. Can it be a biopic about an event?
Yeah, that's what I like. What Ben Affleck does, like same with Argo. I actually enjoy this way of storytelling a lot more, where you're taking a specific time in history and talking about that, as opposed to like Ray Charles' whole life,
right?
Which you cannot stuff into an hour.
Finite thing that happened.
Yes,
telling the story of how it happened.
It's a much better way to tell a story, I think.
Yeah, and Air came out, of course, you know, earlier this year, I guess.
That's our newest movie by far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have we not done any of the new ones yet?
We were
going to do White Man Can't Jump, the new one, and
right.
other stuff. I guess Air is the first new one we've done.
Air is like the most modern movie, but it's been like 5 years.
It's terrific.
Very good.
It's a good movie. Jerry Maguire's a good movie. And the way I think these two compare to each other is they're sports movies that aren't about sports.
Yeah, they're both sports.
About the business of sports.
Business movies, yeah.
And people will say, I said I love Air, it's a good sports movie. They'll be like, oh, it's not a sports movie. It is.
Oh, absolutely.
The business of sports is still sports.
Of course.
The machinations of sports, the behind the scenes, is still sports. And the
You're having discussions about Melvin Turpin? It's a sports movie.
It's a sports movie, yes.
There's no question.
So, Jerry Maguire, Air, I love both of these movies. Obviously, I've loved one for a long time.
Okay.
Question. Have you seen Air multiple times?
I saw it for the second time last night.
Me too. So this is the second time I saw it too. But
holds up remarkably well.
Correct. It was like the second watch was still fresh and still breezes by.
I was a little nervous because I saw it in the theaters at the Alamo Draft House here in New York, which is the first time I've ever gone to one of those. The theater was fantastic. It's had this really great experience.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm like, all right, let's see how this plays the second time around. We loved it just as much.
Yeah, it was good. Well, but tell me about those Alamo Draft Houses. Is that where you can get dinner and a drink with your movie?
You can get you can do that, but you can get drinks, and you can also, the popcorn there, they use real butter.
I don't know that I want alcoholic drinks when I watch a movie
because
I might pee. I don't want to pee.
You pee a lot, huh? Yeah.
I mean, we got older bladders.
Yeah. Well, my bladder is fantastic. I can hold in pee I'm a great guy to have on a road trip. I very rarely need to pee.
How often do you pee?
I don't know, 3-4 times a day, maybe 3 times a day. But like, I don't pee at middle of the night. Like, I know a lot of guys our age have to get up in the middle of the night and pee. I never have to do that.
I pee minimum twice a night. Secondly,
You wake up from sleeping to
pee?
Oh, no, I've never done that. So a couple of times, once every month, I'll have to wake up to poop.
Secondly, those are the worst.
Because you're
still sleepy and you're just...
Like, can I hold out? And you end up waking up.
You realize you have to get up. And
That is the worst.
But when my biggest... anxiety in my life is when I'm getting on a plane and it's 2 hours and it's right on a level. Am I going to be able to make this whole flight without having to get up to go pee?
Yeah, I can always do that.
And it's always easier if I just get up and go pee,
just pee
halfway through. But I don't want to get up. I don't want to walk over everybody.
I know. Are you a window seat or aisle seat guy?
I'm a window seat guy.
Me too. I like to cuddle up. What I do is I get
right. You got the wall. You got the wall.
I tuck into the wall.
Got the wall.
And I sleep.
Got the wall.
It's a no-brainer.
The no-brainer. Plus, the window, and you know, if we're like descending, I want to see. I want to see where everything is. I want to see things.
I like looking out. Yeah, people pay a lot of money for big time tours.
I flew over Chicago the other day. So I looked out the window, saw Wrigley Field. That was cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. So yeah, I'm a window gazer.
Did you see the 2-bedroom shack you're going to move into from the sky? Like, oh, that's
well,
fair enough.
We flew over Chicago, not an hour north of it. So it was, yeah, we didn't get close to my house. Mm. But, all right, Jerry Maguire first.
Okay.
Jerry Maguire. Now, I have it's not really an interesting story, but in 96, this is my senior year of high school.
Okay.
96.
Might as well.
I was dating, I had a girlfriend. It was my first actual girlfriend, like actual functional girlfriend. And we would go out every Friday and Saturday night. That was our time because, you know, we were in school and on Friday and Saturday night we could go out and we would go pretty much saw every movie that came out between like September of 96 to May of 97, right? It's every single movie. Romeo and Juliet, The Frighteners, like there were so many movies I would never see, but I had a girlfriend. However, this came out December 13th, 1996. I did not see it in the theater. I don't even remember it coming out, Clemmer. I do not remember this. This was a second wave movie for me. I didn't watch this movie until it came out on tape.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. So this
I don't either.
Came out, we graduated the same year. This was nominated for Best Picture. It got a ton of hype. Obviously, Tom Cruise movie, when Tom Cruise is at the peak of his powers, it got, you know, this was a movie, it was everywhere. I don't really understand.
It opened big, too. Yep.
This was like during Christmas break. Maybe your girlfriend.
That's what I think. That's what I think. I think that we just didn't spend time together in Christmas because we were on a break. But I don't remember. But I looked at this list. What was out? 101 Dalmatians was in its third week of release. Mm-hmm. I literally saw that in the theaters twice.
Oh, see, that's one I did not see.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, I saw that.
It sounds like you like mentally challenged when you were in school, or
I wasn't.
It's almost like you've seen these movies that for children.
Well, Romeo and Juliet wasn't for children.
No, but it's a teenage movie. I mean, it's fine. It's a great movie to bring a date to.
I was dating a teenager.
I know, but like I meant like a teenage girl, but it's fine. I understand.
I was dating a teenage girl.
I understand Romeo and Juliet. I'm not saying that. I'm saying 101 Dalmatians twice and not Jerry Maguire was a strange.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't even remember it coming out. That's the crazy part. I do not remember. But I remember like 4 or 5 months later when it hit the DVD places, or I guess it was still VHS at that point. I remember getting it and loving it immediately and wondering, like, why didn't I see this in the theaters again? But yeah, it's a great ass movie, and it's both of these movies take the concept. Sports agent grows a conscience, goes through some things, and you know, hilarity ensues or whatever ensues, and then Nike signs Michael Jordan. Neither movie based on those concepts should be as good as they are.
Correct. Yes, correct.
Although Jerry Maguire has a lot more meat on the bones as far as story.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire, I'm a little more. I don't think it's as great as you do. So we'll.
You don't think it's as great as I do? Okay, so you. Okay, well, Jerry Maguire comes out December 13th, 1996. What does that mean to you?
I loved it. I saw it. I think
immediately.
Yeah, I saw it like you know within the first couple weeks for sure. I remember just thinking it was the greatest thing ever. And then I bought the VHS.
Yeah.
And I watched it a million times. And watching it now as an adult compared to what I was when I was 17, I have very different feelings about the characters involved.
Really?
Yeah. Like Jerry Maguire, I feel is a soulless vampire who is trying. He's like a robot. He's trying so hard to find any humanity he can wherever he can, and it's a set. He's like a leech. And he'll reach the humanity.
Isn't he just like a soulless piece of AI that is becoming human, or at least trying to, attempting
to? I think he's trying to, but isn't able. I don't think he ever is able to. And where they feel different
agents. But he's a stone cold killer as an agent, right? He's like a trained assassin. You can't just this movie is about the process of coming out of that, right?
I don't think the process ever happens. I think the emptiness is always there. And I think,
but isn't him getting back together, going in and giving the speech about his wife and saying you, and then you know, saying,
what is this,
I miss my wife.
What is the speech he says to her though? What does he say to her?
I miss my wife.
What does he say that seals the deal?
You
complete me.
You complete me.
Which is what he heard from somebody else.
Right, but it's something they share.
Well, because he heard him.
It's something they share, though.
He doesn't have the ability to actually.
I think you're off on this one, man. I think you're off.
I think he is. I think
this is showing him to learn to be sincere.
Ripping somebody else off.
No, I don't think so. I think there's.
He doesn't know how to be a person.
I think this is a character who starts off. He's soulless. He doesn't know how to be a person, but he knows he wants to be. Right?
You can want to be. It doesn't mean you become one.
But let me say my spiel. He knows he wants to be, and he doesn't really know how to get there. He doesn't know the roadmap. But ultimately, there are three people that help him get there. It's Rod Tidwell, his guy, the only guy that sticks with him. The only person really that sticks with him from start to finish of this movie is Rod Tidwell.
Right.
It's the woman who sticks with him, and it's her son. Renee Zellweger. And Jonathan Lipnicki, her son. Those are the three people. Mm-hmm. That show him. Actually, there's four because he sees Marcy,
yes,
played by Regina King, in the way she interacts with her husband and how much love they have, and that allows him. He sees that, and that allows him to tap into that part of him by the end of the movie, which is why he goes back after the biggest night of success in his career, the biggest night of his career on Monday Night Football. He runs out of that stadium. He runs home and start in front of everybody. He opens his heart up and says, "You're wrong on this one." He finds the humanity. That's why he runs out of the stadium, Klimmer.
I don't believe him.
That's why he runs out of the stadium.
I think he's doing that. Why do you think? Rod told him to.
No.
Rod kind of.
There are lighthouses pointing him in the direction.
I think they're pointing. I don't think it ever works. And I think Jerry Maguire think in wrong. 5 years is still a soulless man.
I don't know why you think that. There is growth in this movie.
I also think that the actor. I was having an interesting talk with Shay before you got here, and Shay was saying, we're talking about just the different actors, and I was saying, imagine if Matt Damon played Jerry Maguire and Tom Cruise played Sonny Vaccaro, and it's a really interesting switch, because I think I'd have a lot more sympathy for Jerry Maguire if it was Matt Damon, because Matt Damon is always the underdog you just root for. I've been doing it for 30 years now, almost. Where Tom Cruise, especially the Tom Cruise that we know who he is now, like kind of this like soulless action hero, but you see it kind of bleed into things. So like if you watch Magnolia, you see kind of that soulless guy try to find a conscience or try to
stop saying soulless.
He is soulless. It's a vapidness. It's emptiness.
I don't think you understand this movie.
Oh, I think I do. I think I understand think it almost too well.
Jerry Maguire cannot be an underdog. Jerry Maguire has to be a trained assassin. He has to be a killer in the Asian world. He has to be a highly successful, lucrative sports agent who a little bit of humanity seeps in and it causes him to lose everything. But ultimately, he's not an underdog. He's a fucking winner. And he has to lose everything to understand what's really important. Do you understand that?
I do. I understand.
He can't be an underdog. He can't be a plucky guy next door.
Right.
He has to be a Tom.
He does lose everything. He does become
an underdog. He has to be a good-looking ass dude that talks smooth.
Of course. But he also does become an underdog. He loses all of his clients but one. Like, when he's having the thing with Kush at the draft,
yeah.
Like, that's an underdog. That's underdog things are happening there.
He becomes an underdog.
Right.
He embraces it. He goes and finds humanity.
Jerry Maguire in, you know, 5 years after this movie is a...
Why are you obsessed with 5 years after this movie?
Because I don't think he ever finds his conscience. I think he's supposed to. He's on the path.
He finds it.
I don't believe he
That's
does.
What the scene is at the end.
I know. It doesn't feel like it actually.
Renee Zellweger and all the women are sitting around talking about how terrible men are. He wades right into it and he says, "Listen, I'm doing this right in front of everybody. God damn it. I love you. You're my wife. This is going to work. You complete."
I don't believe him.
Why not?
Because I don't.
Why do you believe any movie character ever?
I don't believe this character. It doesn't mean it's a flaw on the movie necessarily. We're fighting for the
Gooch. Are you? Is Gooch there?
Yeah. What's up?
Have you seen this movie?
Yeah.
Is he crazy?
Listen, he's not that crazy.
Thank you.
About this movie?
Yeah.
He is kind of a piece of shit through the whole thing.
He learns to not. He
doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It's almost more interesting.
Shut
in
up,
some
Gooch. Somebody asked you.
Yep. Professional Brandon over there. In some ways, it's almost a more interesting movie. I know what Cameron Crowe is trying to do, exactly what you described. So the intent of the movie is exactly what you're saying. Exactly. But I don't think it takes. And I think it's almost more interesting if it doesn't take. Because the movie, as you describe it, is so cliched. It's like, ugh. But if the idea of this guy never actually becomes a human being, that's interesting to me.
I just don't see it, man. I don't see this 2-hour ride just ending up in nothingness. I feel like he goes through the things he goes through and comes out a better person. I don't know. I don't see him entering as this soulless robot and coming out as a soulless robot. I don't see that. And I don't understand how y'all see that.
Do you appreciate have you seen The Sopranos?
No.
Okay. I don't know if you appreciate kind of like the anti-hero, which is kind of taking shape more in the 21st century, but after Jeremy
You're trying Meyer. To explain what anti-hero means, because I understand what that means.
Okay. Well, I don't know if can you give any examples in media where you've enjoyed it. I don't mean like necessarily like Breaking Bad, because he turns into a good guy at the end.
Well, let's attack this movie from several different angles, because we've obviously fleshed out what the main story is, right?
Yes.
I don't think this movie is made, or I don't think this movie is a legendary movie or a great movie, a rewatchable movie, because of the story itself. I think it's made a rewatchable movie because of how good the parts are, of how good Cuba Gooding Jr. is as Rod Tidwell. He won the Oscar.
This movie was nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture.
Best Picture, yeah. Cuba Gooding Jr. is incredible. Regina King.
So good.
Is absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. Lipnicki is a terrific, like, the casting of that kid is right.
Gooch was just saying, all-time child actor.
All-time child performer. It may be one of the greatest ever.
Maybe Joel Osment's better.
Renee Zellweger is...
I think she's excellent.
She's okay.
She has heart. That's the contrast of her actually having a soul and then having this Jerry Maguire character.
She's nothing but soul.
Yes.
She's driven by her soul.
Right.
And she doesn't even stop to think.
She's an authentic human being.
She doesn't stop to think. She's like, okay, well, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do it.
Right.
And that's her story. And it gets her in trouble. But until they meet in the middle at the end.
Yeah, No, he's a piranha. He's always a piranha.
He's not a piranha. He is a piranha. He turns into a guppy.
He sucks what he wants. They even say...
Do you know how piranhas eat?
They call him... Like,
they don't suck.
I guess they chomp, chomp, chomp.
My God. I wasn't through.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Acknowledging the great actors here, because everybody of name was great. There's two more. What Cruz is Cruz, and Cruz it's is
very
really
well
good.
Casted movie.
Very well casted movie. Jay Moore as Bob Sugar is pretty phenomenal. If I came out of this movie and I said over the next 20 years, one of these actors who's not Tom Cruise is going to be a huge superstar, I would have said it's Jay Moore.
I said it when I left the movie.
I thought Jay Moore was going to be.
The studios tried. Remember, they put him in all these rom-coms right afterwards. It didn't work.
Yeah, but Jay Moore in this movie is fantastic.
One of the great, I don't say cameo, but one of the great, because it's bigger than that a little bit, but like one of the great small performances in movie history.
Yeah. Like he's
seen with him and Cruz in the restaurant.
Yeah.
Is so perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great.
Every time he shows up, he's just got that cocky dick bag to him.
I would have loved like 3 or 4 more Bob Sugar scenes.
Yeah.
Give me more Bob Sugar. Amazing performance.
It's a terrific.
And Bo Bridges.
Oh yeah, Bo Bridges.
Jerry O'Connell, the Cushman family. That's great.
Yeah, they nail, and I think this is true on both of these movies we're going to talk about. They nailed every part of the cast.
Oh yeah,
I think both of them are fantastic. And if you're not going to make a sports movie that's going to be based on nonstop sports action and all that stuff, you better get the cast right, because otherwise you're going to be fucked.
Yeah, I don't know where I stand with Cameron Crowe. So Cameron Crowe wrote and directed this.
I didn't know Cameron Crowe wrote and directed this. You know, I don't get in the written. I don't care who writes movies or directs movies.
Should.
I don't get into him very much. But Cameron Crowe, so he's the guy that later did Almost Famous, right?
His very next movie was Almost Famous. He also did Say Anything, Singles. And after Almost Famous, it all kind of fell apart for him. Well, interesting stuff. So he wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Right.
Because he actually went to a high school. He was so young, and he pretended to be a student and took those experiences and wrote Fast Times. So he does Jerry Maguire, does Almost Famous, does a movie I like a lot, Vanilla Sky, which a lot of people don't like, and then it all falls apart. He does Elizabethtown, which is horrible.
Yeah.
And then we bought a zoo. Like it all just falls apart.
Well, I don't mean to say this, but does it fall apart? Because We Bought a Zoo was like, it made money, right? It made a lot of money?
I don't know if it made a lot of money. I think it did okay. Matt Damon, right? And Scarlett Johansson. It did okay. Did okay. Didn't make a ton. Did okay.
So this is...
Made money. Profitable.
So this is right almost to his peak. I guess he peaks at Almost Famous, writing his own life story.
I guess I'm talking more critically than anything else.
Okay. Yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah, but like what happened? I just don't understand. How do you make Jerry Maguire, which is an entertaining movie...
Almost Famous back to
Almost Famous, which is a brilliant movie, and then... Like I said, I like Vanilla Sky. Some people don't, whatever. But then it all just... He can't make a good movie. He does Aloha,
which is
terrible.
I think this happens in sports a lot, where... I would imagine writing really good movies is hard. I bet it's very fucking hard.
I'm sure. Yeah, and he writes and directs him. So right. For all his movies.
Like, you'll see a guy come on the scene and bat, you know, for 2 years in a row, he'll bat 330 with 20 home runs, and then all of a sudden he's not very good. Well, yeah, hitting baseball is really goddamn hard. And sometimes it's just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like, if you have one bad movie, you might not ever get it back.
So you have, like, this movie called Gross Point Blank, which I like a lot. I think I've talked about it on the show. Yeah. And the guy wrote it, and that was the only movie he ever wrote. It's like he had one good idea, boom. You don't usually see a guy have like three or four good movies.
And then not have
it. Usually it's like one or two, or it's 7 to 10. It's never like three or four. It's very strange. And then to have it all, he was, I think, 40. What year was he born? He's born in 66, I think.
Yeah.
So he was.
Well, he would have been 30.
I'm sorry, 57, excuse me.
57.
So he was 43 when he directed his last good movie. That's very rare.
Yeah. And this is such a unique idea for a movie too. I don't imagine there were a lot of scripts out there with sports agents and their self identity crises and stuff like that. This was a unique take on a sports movie. Or
never should have worked.
It shouldn't have worked.
No,
but they got Tom Cruise and then they got Cuba Gooding Jr. Which Cuba Gooding Jr. It's not like they went out and got Denzel.
He was a nobody then.
Yeah, he was a nobody.
Yeah.
It just happened to.
It was Renee Zellweger.
It just happened to get it right.
I mean, perfect casting. The casting in this is. And like I said, it wasn't like they got. Cuba Gooding Jr. and Renee Zellweger were nobodies. Jonathan Lemnicki, you know what, obviously. These were people who just plucked out of thin air and they became household names.
So what happens? You write a script, mm-hmm. You give it to the studio. The studio says, throws it to Tom Cruise. Now you got Tom Cruise on board and you build the cast. You build the team around him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing Tom Cruise was very involved from Jump Street. I mean, I don't know the background. I don't know if Crow wrote it for Cruise, you know, specifically. Obviously, they worked again later on in Vanilla Sky. But Tom Cruise at this point in his career is heavily involved.
Well, I want to talk about the Tom Cruise career. In the last 50 years of television, of movie acting, say go back to 1970. Say go back to 1970.
Okay.
Where is he? Is he a top five actor, or is he a top five star, or is it one and the same? Where is he?
He's definitely top five star because you got Nicholson.
Yeah,
talking 70 on.
Yeah,
we missed Newman.
Yeah,
Redford is in the mix somewhere.
Right.
You got Hanks, who's Cruise is a bigger star than Hanks. Hanks is a better actor. You have the Schwarzenegger.
Tom Cruise is a bigger star than Tom Hanks.
Oh yeah, Tom Cruise is the biggest star in the world when Tom Hanks was winning two Oscars back to back. Like, Tom Cruise was the biggest star in the world.
I don't know that I agree with that. I don't know.
2000 Tom Cruise.
I think in the late, between 85 and 88, he was, right? But I think in 94, 95, I think Hanks was a bigger star.
He won the Oscars back to back. But yeah. Let's pull up Cruise's.
So he was doing Mission Impossible back then, right? He was doing.
Mission Impossible was 96, I believe, the same year as Vanilla Sky.
Same year as this movie.
I'm sorry, Jeremy Wright is not Vanilla Sky. Jeremy Wright is Jeremy Maguire, excuse me. So let's go through his 90s real quick. It's easy. 89, 88 he does.
All right, hold on. Let me try this. 88 he does Cocktail and Rain Man.
Right.
89 he does Born on the 4th of July.
Correct. So no, so he's winning. He's an Oscar winning. Rain Man won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like, these are big. He's got nominated for Best Actor for Born on the 4th of July. Like, yeah.
1990 he does Days of Thunder.
90 he does Days of Thunder, which. Right.
It's somewhere in there, it does Far and Away.
92, it is Far and Away and A Few Good Men.
And then 93 is the Vampire. 94, the Vampire movie?
Yeah, 93 is Firm. 94 is Vampire. 96 is Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
99, he does Eyes Wide Shut and Magnolia. And then 2000 is Mission Impossible 2.
You got,
and we lose him.
You got Nicholson, Hanks, Cruise. I don't know.
Did he have DiCaprio?
DiCaprio. And maybe is there a slice up down to Pitt and Damon, or is there?
Yeah, and then Pitt, Damon, Denzel, probably are in there.
Those are the names that you talk about.
I mean, you also got Stallone and Schwarzenegger in there.
Yeah, but Cruise comfortably in top five, you'd say.
I think he's the biggest movie star since 1970. Full stop.
Full stop.
Now he's
the
best actor.
I think Hanks has a push. I think Hanks has a conversation here to be.
I think Hanks is a better actor. Doesn't have that same. I mean, Tom Cruise has been in so many. Top, like, just giant movies where Tom Hanks doesn't quite have that. He doesn't have as many giant hits as.
Okay.
Tom Cruise has his own franchise. Like, Tom Hanks doesn't have a franchise. Like, Tom Cruise.
I feel like Tom Hanks could have had a franchise.
What? Money Pit Part 6?
Saving Private Ryan 2. They go find his son in the war.
Right. I mean, they
just keep going to Saving Private Ryan's grandson.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't lend itself. Now, I said it. Tom Hanks in Castaway is like one of the greatest.
Well, let me ask you it this way: What do you believe would win if we put out a poll? What is the best Tom Cruise movie? What do you think would win?
Because it would probably win, even though it shouldn't. Is there any business winning? It's probably Top Gun.
Top Gun or Top Gun Maverick?
Oh, yeah. I guess it's recency bias, but I wouldn't even put that in the top four.
So
Top Gun would win. It shouldn't.
Let's throw out the nominees. Let's throw out the nominees. Okay. Rain Man?
Yeah, it's one best picture, but, I mean, it would get annihilated in a poll.
I'm going to throw another one that will get annihilated in a poll, but I love it. The Color of Money.
Well, yeah, but that's not that, – I agree with you.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. Let's just run through the movies real quick. We're running through the movies.
A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men?
Yeah, that would do really well.
One of the Mission – what's known as the best Mission Impossible? Fallout?
I guess so.
Mission Impossible Fallout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this probably – movies like most like beloved movies, I guess.
Yeah.
That would win a poll. I don't – polls, though. I mean, what are we doing here?
I think you're right. I think Top Gun would win.
Yeah, which is just
I think it's the biggest tentpole movie. And he went back to the well twice. He went back to the well, and it was even bigger the second time.
Yeah. And better. Top Gun Maverick is a very good movie. The original Top Gun doesn't do it for me.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't hate. I mean, it's fine. The original Top Gun, but the second Top Gun is way better.
Tom Cruise, like I said, the biggest movie star of our lifetime.
I say all that to say this. Such a big star, such a huge, and he hadn't quite made his he hadn't made his transition to action star yet,
right.
But this is just such a unique thing for him to have done.
It wasn't unique back then.
He just dropped into.
It feels unique now.
Yeah,
back then he was doing dramas. He was doing good movies. Now he only does Mission Impossible, which I know they're very good. I appreciate them, but like I wish he did other stuff too.
Yeah.
It bums me out what Tom Cruise has become. Because when in 1996, if you told me Tom Cruise would never win an Oscar, I'd be, you're crazy. But he hasn't been nominated for an Oscar since 99.
Hasn't even tried, though, has he?
I mean, I guess consider what trying is. But right, he hasn't.
I mean, actors know if they do. I mean, Mission Impossible Fallout, he's not going to win.
No, but if you told me he wouldn't be nominated for an Oscar in the 21st century, I mean, that's madness. Because this guy had been nominated for a number of times before that.
How many times was he nominated?
Good question. Yeah, I'll find out. Yeah, I mean, I'd say at least five, right?
Gooch threw up the two.
He's been nominated more than two times.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
I don't have my headphones on.
What are you saying, Gooch?
You know, he's got a movie coming up where he goes to outer space. They're filming it in outer space.
Yeah, one of the. Is it
Doug Liman? Yeah.
Yeah. He's been nominated four times.
That's going to be the one. He'll die filming that.
Oh, I'm that'll sorry.
That'll be the posthumous Oscar.
Three times. He was nominated for Best Actor for Born the 4th of July, Jerry Maguire. He was not nominated for Rain Man, which is a crime.
Yeah.
And then he was nominated Best Supporting Actor for Magnolia. And then it was nominated as a producer for Best Picture for Top Gun.
Did Hoffman get the Rain Man nomination?
Yeah, he won.
He won, yeah. All right. Well, Cruise is a fantastic actor, but he's also he's a movie star and a great actor, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is like Schwarzenegger. That it's not the case. Like Schwarzenegger,
right?
A,
yeah,
a
Stallone.
Star,
although Stallone,
Stallone's
can
a great
act.
Actor.
Stallone can act.
Yeah. Specific things. Cruise is a better actor than Stallone.
Yeah, I would say so.
The whole body of work.
I would say so. But you know, there are movie stars that are not great actors.
Right. DiCaprio is both.
I don't think Bruce Willis is a great actor. He was a movie star.
Yeah, you're right. Bruce Willis is really good at doing Bruce Willis-y things, though. Like, he's really good in Pulp Fiction. He's obviously amazing in Die Hard. He's very good in Sixth Sense.
All right, I was going to ask this. Does the love story with Renee Zellweger hurt this movie?
It helps it to me enormously. When I was 18, I thought, I'm like, enough of this.
Yeah.
Watching it now, in my 40s, I'm like, I want more of this. I want less of Jerry Maguire just doing Jerry Maguire-y things, because it's just boring and one note to me. And I just don't like him. I don't like him. He's gross. Like, he's a bad. I think he's a good. He's not a good person.
I don't understand this. I hate this take so much.
Okay.
I hate this take so much. He's a man. He's a flawed man, like you are, like I am. He's a flawed man that is in a grimy business, and the griminess gets too much for him. And he's like, I got to change, man. I got to change. And he is thrown out on his ass for it. And now he's lost. Then this isn't a guy who's soulless. He's fucking lost. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know where to turn. And he has a roadmap here provided by Cuba Gooding Jr. and Renee Zellweger. And he eventually gets there. But he's not soulless. He just doesn't know what to do.
He's always soulless. He was soulless when it starts. You don't get it.
He's not soulless. He's searching for
soul because someone gives you a roadmap.
He is searching for it. That's what he is doing. That's what the movie's about. You're the worst. I can't believe you watch movies this poorly.
It's like AI. Like, you can give a robot a roadmap. It doesn't mean he's going to get it.
I can't believe you watch movies this poorly. This is crazy.
Would you want your daughter to marry Jerry Maguire?
Why did you enjoy this?
Do you want your daughter to marry Jerry Maguire?
Why did you enjoy this?
You wouldn't, because you know he's not a good person.
The Jerry Maguire of the first 15 minutes? Probably not. The Jerry Maguire at the end who's walking hand in hand.
Believe that guy?
Yeah, I do.
I don't.
I do. I see the whole thing play out in front of me. I see him about the money at first, and I see him absolutely just take on this girl. I see him make a mistake and get married to this woman who he doesn't love at all, and he just does it because he thinks that's going to help.
Right.
But by the end, he does, and he feels, and he all these things work out.
Why? Why does he all of a sudden flipping a dime?
Because he goes through a fucking...
What?
He goes through everything.
No, but he went through a lot of shit before he married her.
Rod Tidwell helps him realize what he is realizing. He helps him realize these things.
He sees Rod. See, he always needs to see someone else before he can actually act on it. He needs to see Rod and his wife, and he can copy that like a robot, and then go back to Renee Zellweger.
I fucking hate this argument. I hate your stance on this movie. How do you enjoy this movie?
Because I like the Renee Zellweger, and I also like the idea of a soulless man that can't get humanity.
But he does, goddammit!
How does the movie end?
Them walking, I know why. Them walking off, they're walking hand in hand, they got Ray in between them, yep. 6-year-old kid. The baseball comes by, he throws it, and then he goes like, oh, wow, look, he might be an athlete.
Yeah.
Something like that. That's a wink, wink, nod, nod. That's a joke to end the movie. That's not indicative that he's about to turn this guy into some athlete robot.
Vampire.
I can't believe.
Second vampire movie did that decade.
So by your logic, Renee Zellweger, her character is just stupid.
No, she's a good...
No, she is, because she falls for this guy's tricks.
Well, she falls... Well, by your account, she's stupid, too, because she marries him the first time when he didn't love her. Renee Zellweger, unfortunately, his character falls for these tricks.
Can we decide if we're going to say Zellweger or Zellweger, because I like Zellweger better.
Zellweger works for me. I mispronounce names all the time. Zellweger.
All right.
Fine.
It's her fault for having that name.
I agree. Which is it's her real name, though, so you got to... That's good.
Okay, fine.
It's not her fault. It's her... No.
All right, that's her name.
Yeah.
I don't think you like this movie, to be honest.
I don't like it as much as anyone as a kid. I told you that.
It's an all-time athlete movie to me. Great athlete cameos.
Drew Bledsoe.
I
really Aikman. I like the Tidwell character, Rod Tidwell. I love stuff with him and his wife. I really like the... There's a lot of stuff I really like about this movie. You're right. In parts, it's stuff I like.
Yeah.
I just kind of found that the more I watch it, the more I hate the main character. Which is not a reason to hate a movie either. I can enjoy a movie that I hate the main character.
What rating did this movie have?
PG-13, right? They only... R. No, R, because he's fucking Kelly Preston. R.
All right. I was going to say, didn't that seem like kind of a crazy, aggressive sex scene for this movie?
Yeah, it's Kelly Preston, though.
No, I'm fine with it. I'm good. But it was just like...
Pretty intense.
It's pretty out of place here. And then, like, the whole movie is... There's no hard edges to it. It's kind of a saccharine movie a little bit.
Yeah.
And then right in the first 15 minutes, it's just this, you know, just 20 seconds, just right. Just hardcore fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good for him.
Yeah.
She did.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Very sad.
R.I.P. Where do you want to go elsewhere on this movie?
We're going to give it 1 to 100.
Well, no, we're not there yet.
Okay, all right.
Because I think this movie is an interesting... I think you're going to go easy on this one, but who's the MVP of this movie?
Ooh,
I mean, it's one of two guys.
I'm going to go Renee Zellweger.
No chance.
Yeah.
No. Have you seen this movie?
I have many times.
It can't be anybody but Rod Tidwell. It can't be anybody but...
He won
the fucking Oscar, man.
Oh, I mean, that's fine. It's fine. The characters can be a little bit... The stuff with him and his wife are fantastic. I love that stuff. When he's doing the bit, it's like it gets a little tired. And also, just might be the fact that we've heard these quotes so many times. Like,
show me the money.
It's not the movie's fault. It's like a great song that you hear too many times. So at this point, honestly, so when I watch the movie now, I enjoy the scenes with Dorothy Boyd more than any other part. But it's almost maybe because I didn't see them as much.
I just figured it out.
What's that?
You are a goddamn woman.
I'm a woman.
That's what you are. You are a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you just want the little. Oh my goodness, look at what she's wearing. Oh goodness, I love this conversation she's having. Oh my goodness,
what she's
just
wearing. What are you
I love
about?
Dorothy Boyd. It's just this is so good. Yep. God, did Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding Jr. are acting their fucking asses off? You're talking about Renee Zellweger.
Tom Cruise is. I don't even know if Tom Cruise is acting. I think this is who Tom Cruise is.
Oh, now we get a. Are you anti? You're just. Is this whole thing going to be an anti Scientology thing? Is that what this is?
No, not necessarily.
You got a vendetta against Tom
Cruise. Kirstie Alley was a Scientologist, and she was a very like emotional actress. I don't think it is about Scientology.
Kirstie Alley was an emotional actress?
Yeah, I can cheer.
She was on TV.
Yeah, but she was like but she wasn't like this cold hearted person on Tom Cruise is this weird cold heart to him. And like people have written essays about how he doesn't have chemistry with other leads because now having said that though, he's the perfect guy to play Jerry Maguire. So it is perfect casting.
Who's the least valuable player?
This is this part's a Cameron Crowe script. I don't love it. You can't say it. He did everything. I don't know. I don't really have one.
I don't think there's anything.
You know who I don't like? Is the nanny, the male nanny who likes jazz.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I don't like the sister.
Oh, I like her a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, I feel she's like an honest, she's like the voice, almost like the voice of the audience. Like,
yeah.
This shouldn't. I feel like she's like the one person in this that actually is like correct
as actual human emotions.
Yeah,
and follows them.
Not a cartoon. I think Bonnie Hunt does a great job in that role. I like it. Really like the way it's written. I wish more characters were like that.
All right.
I think Regina King also is that same role too. Where no, this is an honest portrayal of a human being. I do like this movie. Don't get me wrong.
What score do you give this?
81.
You like this less than you liked Hoosiers.
Yeah.
You didn't like Hoosiers at all.
I like Hoosiers a lot. This is the thing is like, for you, it's either great or horrible. Like, I have a little bit more depth. I know I'm brighter than you. Maybe that's why. But I can see things more than just black or white. I have emotional intelligence there.
You can't see the fucking, you can't see the story that they tell in this movie. You can't see what that was written playing in front of you.
Oh, I see what's happening in front of me. I'm making my own judgments on that.
I give it a 90.
Okay, that's fine.
I think it's a good movie.
I would have
good
given
ass
it,
movie.
I would have given it a 94 when I saw it out of the theaters, and when I saw it, I loved it that much. I thought it was great.
So you were not as ruthless of a cunt back then as you are now.
I guess not.
Kind of grew into being,
or I was naive and stupid back then.
You grew into being more of an asshole.
Yeah, or you could say I've just become brighter and I can see through things a little bit better.
I don't know that that's true at all.
I can understand text better now. Understand humanity better.
What are you gonna crap on Air about?
Not much. Really good.
All right, Air's up next. Let me make sure I got all my notes out on Jerry Maguire. I had Jay Moore, sneaky good. A sports movie doesn't have to be wall to wall sports to be a sports movie. Does a love story hurt the movie? All time athlete movie. Oh, can I do the top 10 of December 13th, 1996?
I also want to do the nominees for Best Picture as well. So go ahead.
All right. Can I guess the nominees for Best Picture?
The guessing thing, it takes. I don't think no one ever wants to hear you guess. Just get, show me the business. Come on, you've been doing this a while.
You know, you're making the decision a lot easier.
This is why you're moving.
Number one,
Chicago.
It opened number one with $17 million in December 13th, 1996. Mars Attacks also opened that weekend.
Which is a flawed movie, but it's awful entertaining. It's fun. It's stupid as fuck.
I think I saw it once.
It's funny.
Number three in his third week, 101 Dalmatians, a live action. The Preacher's Wife, number four. I don't really remember.
And Zell and Whitney Houston, right?
Yeah, okay. Number five, Daylight. I think that's Sylvester Stallone in a tunnel.
That's correct. Very bad movie.
Jingle All the Way at number six is finishing up. Well, I guess it's like in week four.
Another bad movie.
Star Trek First Contact. I don't remember that one.
Bad Star Trek movie.
Ransom. Is that Mel Gibson?
Fantastic. Mel Gibson? So underrated. Ron Howard directed it. It's Mel Gibson. It's so good. I love this movie so much.
Number nine's finishing up after opening up like 6 weeks earlier, Space Jam and The English Patient.
Which one, Best Picture?
That was going to be my guess.
Yeah, that's one of the – you want to guess the other three?
Nope,
no?
Sure don't.
Good. English Patient, Fargo, Jerry Maguire, Secrets and Lies, and Shine. And I remember going into the Oscars –
I don't remember Shine or Secrets and Lies at all.
Shine was Jeffrey Rush. Okay. He was like a crazy like musician.
Okay.
And he won the Best Actor for it. Secret and Lies, I have no memory of at all. Going into the Oscars, it was a two-horse race. It was either going to be English Patient or Fargo. Kind of like the Oscars with Forrest Gump. It was either Forrest Gump or Pulp Fiction. Like – Fargo was the dark horse. Obviously, English Patient wound up winning. But I think looking back on it now, we both would agree the two movies that stuck are Fargo and Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, English Patient doesn't really hold up as a winner, especially in a time where the winners were really kind of banging through. That, like, it was following up Braveheart as a winner, wasn't it? It was following
That's
up Forrest Gump, Braveheart. Like, there were Schindler's List were the last three. Mm-hmm. And then Unforgiven before that, Silence of the Lambs before that. Are you impressed?
I am.
So there were some, like, big-time cultural impact movies and some heavy hitters, and then the English Patient wins.
Yeah, but it's, at the time, people saw it as this big epic. It just hasn't held up very well.
What's next after? Does Shakespeare in Love win next, yes, or does Titanic win next?
Oh.
You go Titanic, then Shakespeare in Love.
Yes. Okay. And then American Beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other movie that was nominated for Best Actor that didn't get a nomination for Best Picture is People vs. Larry Flynt, which is fantastic.
Is that Woody Harrelson? It's
yeah. So good. That
I
should
never
have
saw
been.
It.
Very good.
I remember it, but I never saw it.
You should really watch it. It's
the Best Actor nominees again?
It's pretty stacked. You have Jeffrey Rush winning for Shine, which, in hindsight, Tom Cruise for Jerry Maguire, Ralph Fiennes for English Patient,
mm-hmm,
Woody Harrelson for People vs. Larry Flynt, and then Billy Bob Thornton for Sling Blade, which is a great performance. Very good movie.
When people want to hurt my feelings, they'll say I'm Billy Bob Thornton in Sling Blade.
Yeah, I see a lot of similarities. Air.
So Air, to me, gives me hope, because most of the movies we look at on a sports movie podcast are from the 80s and the 90s. We haven't really had very many good sports movies in the last 10 years.
No, there's certainly a few of them. Yeah.
Very few of them. They don't get made very often.
The Way Back's very good.
They don't get made very often, but if Affleck and Damon are out there making something like this, it gives me hope that somebody will come along and say, hey, we can make money on this shit. Like, this is – they took a very – because this is probably – this whole event, Michael Jordan signing with Nike, probably took a month out of 1984. Probably took a month from around the NBA draft to whenever they signed him. So they took a month out of 1984 and delivered an hour and 40 minutes of just breezy. That's what this movie is about to me. When you start it to when you finish it, it just flies by. It's just there's no lull, there's no lag, there's no, well, what time
it feels like it's 80 minutes.
It feels like it's 80 minutes. Now the first thing it hits you in the face with, which I love, the 1984-ness of this movie is drip. I mean, they just hit you with a brick over the head with it. And I love that part of
perfect.
It. Because 84, I think, could be in the running for greatest year in the history of America.
It's in the running.
Because if you think about the movies that were out that year, Ghostbusters, Beverly Hills Cop, there's an Indiana Jones, on and on and on. Gremlins.
Yeah.
Like huge movies, Karate Kid, the music we had, Prince, Michael Jackson, they were on top of the world. Just
Springsteen,
Bruce
Madonna,
Springsteen, and
Michael Jackson.
If you look in sports, you had an Olympics in LA that year. Yep. You had the greatest NBA Finals ever, Celtics Lakers. You had Michael Jordan getting drafted. Like, it's just 84 is incredible, and they just hit you with these rapid fire. They show you like these Wendy's commercials. Where's the beef? This night, the for about 3 minutes, they set the table of being in 1984, and you just. For somebody who lived through it, it was incredible.
It's awesome. And the music in the background.
Awesome. It is awesome.
The music throughout the entire movie is just banger after banger. It's incredible. I love even like, and this isn't a, you know, the movie's very good, but just even this, like they showed a shot of Wonder Bread in the old packaging. It's like, oh, that hit for
yes.
me. Like just seeing these things.
I think there's a shot. Was there a shot of New Coke or Coke? There's a shot of Coke at some point where you're like, oh, that's only back then.
Yeah. Like the whole throughout, even like The Office has like wall-to-wall carpeting and like, it's just kind of like the computers are old. I know you can see any movie from a certain time, yeah. But the way Affleck directs this and shoots it, you feel like you're back in 1984. It's perfectly done.
Yeah, I think they got the scenery, the ambient, everything is
clothes,
fantastic. The clothes,
the cars. I mean, just,
it's they really hit 1984 perfect.
Yes.
And you know, if you're not going to get that right, don't even make this movie. But they did. Now, I guess the one question people have, and people on Twitter will be like, "You like that movie? Michael Jordan's not even in that movie."
Good.
So I think that's a terrific decision.
Brilliant.
I don't need Michael Jordan in this movie.
Oh,
because Michael Jordan. A, he wasn't really Michael Jordan yet, and B, his mom and dad were along for the ride. They were making this decision.
This isn't about Michael Jordan. I mean, the last speech is, but it's even really Sonny's perception of Michael Jordan. Okay, so you have two options. Option A is what they did.
Yeah.
Option B is you have the young actor playing Michael Jordan who's not going to look like Michael Jordan. It's going to be weird and distracting. Why? Why?
This movie isn't about Michael Jordan. It's about somebody's vision to see the phenomenon he was going to become.
The first guy to see it.
It was the first guy to see it. It's about Sonny Vaccaro. It's not about Michael Jordan.
No. Exactly.
It's about Sonny and convincing the rest of Nike and Michael's mom that, hey, the vision. I got this vision. It's going to come true. We don't need Michael Jordan for the vision. We know Michael Jordan. We saw it. We lived it. I don't need to go back. Now, when they do, they show him like twice walking and you just see his head. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have the hair right. So, I think that decision was fantastic and helps the movie tremendously.
Absolutely. This is Sonny Vaccaro's story. This is, you know, we talk about underdogs that I've seen some people write, oh, how can it be an underdog story? The guy works for a $1 billion company, which I guess is somewhat fair.
But it wasn't.
But it's about Sonny Vaccaro, who isn't underdog and who is trying to save this dying department of this major company. And there's that great scene with Jason Bateman, talks about how he brings his daughter sneakers every weekend. And how, like, Sonny, by taking this risk, puts all of them at risk.
Yeah. So here's the thing. It's impossible, if you were under the age of 30, to envision a world where Nike wasn't Nike. But back in 85, when you looked on TV and you saw NBA players playing, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson had Converse commercials.
Yep.
They were in Converse. Mm-hmm. Converse is barely a thing now. And Nike is everything. But this is the story of how that came to be. And I don't know, man. I just love everything about the way they introduced all the characters, like Chris Tucker's character, who's very needed in this, likable, the family.
That's
likes
Michael
him.
Jordan's input.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody here, so many movies, you turn it on and you got to go through some sort of heartache, or somebody's going to die, somebody's going to get shot. This is just a movie that everybody's likable. There's no real conflict here.
There's no bad guy.
There's nothing to worry about. You just kind of turn your brain off and enjoy it.
I don't turn my brain off. I think it's a very complex, sophisticated movie that is told in a breezy way.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in this movie, and people have different roles to play. And it doesn't – just because something's telling a small story doesn't mean it's stupid.
Yeah.
I think it's very intelligently told. It's just telling us, like you said, a very small one-month period, and it almost all takes place in their offices. We never see Sonny Vaccaro's personal life. We see him gambling at the beginning of the movie, but we never meet his wife. We don't even know if he has a wife or kids. We know nothing about him.
I think they leave that office once, and that's when he takes the chance to go to North Carolina.
Yes.
And we need to leave the office because he takes that chance and he goes there, and then he goes right back to the office, and the rest of the movie is in the office. So it's
a movie about work. It's not, and you don't need.
It's a movie about triumph at work. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't need to have the mom and the kids and or the love interest and will he get her back? You don't need any of that, and it just makes it super simple. And it's kind of like that with Argo, where you're telling a very simple, precise story. And I just love how Affleck does that.
I tell you, when this movie grabbed me. I don't know how far in. I think it's about 15 minutes in. But really, we see Damon talking with some Nike executives, and they got the draft board up, and they're trying to discuss who they're going to pick: Charles Barkley,
John Stockton,
Melvin Turpin, yep, all these guys. And you know, there's some typical scout talk where they're wrong and everything. But eventually, he goes to Phil Knight's office to take it to the big guy himself. And he puts on a play, and this is where it got me, this scene. He puts on the play of Michael Jordan winning the 1982 NCAA championship game. Now, I've seen that play in my life 1 million times. And he breaks it down and says why this guy's going to be a star based on the way he carried himself in that play, the way the James Worthy was used as a decoy. I never once saw this play like this.
No, neither did I.
Never.
No.
But he says this
also Dean Smith's confidence in Jordan.
This is how you can tell it's the guy. Look how calm and relaxed he is. Worthy comes across the lane. They're not giving him the ball. He's a decoy and he knows it. Michael Jordan's waiting for the shot. And look how calm he is. He hits the shot. And like, oh, he's right. Everything he just said is right there in that clip. And that's not even a movie. That's an actual – they just took an actual clip of the game, mm-hmm, and broke it down to a level I'd never seen it broken down to. I'm done. I'm good. I'm and the movie's got me at this point because – It felt so awesome.
This was written by Alex Convery. It's his first script ever.
Much like we talked about, how did Cameron Crowe write that movie in 1996? How did he decide? How did this get made?
He was watching, I think he was watching The Last Dance or watching something about Jordan.
Yeah.
And, or wasn't The Last Dance, but something to do with, and kind of talking, they talk very briefly about him signing with Nike. He said, there must be a bigger story there. Did a ton of research, had the script, somehow it got in Affleck's hands, and then Affleck went to Jordan. It was like, hey, what would you change? Jordan took out one character, added on the Chris Tucker character, also added in the Marlon Wayans character.
Okay.
So those guys were really instrumental to me signing. And then also wanted Viola Davis to play his mom.
Yeah.
And said, my parents need to have a bigger role. Damon and Affleck went in, they punched up the script, uncredited, and then it went. And that was it.
Imagine being at a place in life. And this is where the likability of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck to me shines through. Because they could be dickheads based on their career and how successful they've been. But the fact that he's to a point where he can get a script and say, I'm gonna take a meeting with Michael Jordan and see how he likes this.
Yeah.
Run it by him and then you rewrite it. Like that's a feeling of power that's got to be unrivaled.
Yeah, I mean, it helps, I guess, probably having those Oscars. And
Infamous.
Years, yeah. I mean, Affleck and Damon are both Oscar-winning screenwriters themselves. So having this many bright guys work on a movie is going to make... Jason Bateman, obviously, involved, too. Like, you just look at the list of Viola Davis. She's won Oscars.
How many movies now have Affleck and Damon been in together?
They were in that movie, The Last Duel, right? Which I have not seen. They were in Good Will Hunting, and they were in the...
Affleck in that?
Yes.
Last Duel?
Yes. He also co-wrote it.
All right, Good Will Hunting, of course.
Dogma.
They do the little thing in Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, I don't know if I count that.
I don't count it, but I'm just saying it. And then is there anything later? Or
well,
time they got together and
since the Last Duel, I guess, would be the first time. So they talked about
what that. About not The Departed. The no, I don't. I guess I'm missing it. All right.
They talked about this, and they've said, you know, for a long time, we wanted our careers to go our own ways. We didn't want to be...
Divergent paths, yeah.
Yeah, like, hey, we want to kind of do our own thing. Like, they always stayed really close friends, but they're like, hey. And then finally, they're like, why don't we work together more? And that's kind of like... I totally get that. Like, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you do want to do your own thing. But when you're, like, in your 40s, like, I just want to have, like, I want to be happy.
My boys, yeah.
I want to just... And, like, I know we do great work together. It's the only thing that's not getting in the way is our ego. That's stupid. Like, yeah. So, like, who cares if we're in every movie together?
So
you're good.
You get Damon and Affleck together, it's going to be you're probably going to have a hit, right? So, but then Damon, Affleck, Bateman,
yep.
Chris Tucker,
Marlon Wayans,
and Viola Davis.
Yeah,
that's a cast.
That's pretty good.
It's a fucking cast. Yep. I was saying the thing that was great about Jerry Maguire was the cast. Cruz, Zellweger, Cuba Gooding Jr., Regina King, and then Lipnicki. But three of those were nobodies when they got cast. And this is all heavy hitters.
We even have, in a very small part, our guy Jay Moore.
I guess that's right.
He's in the Adidas office.
Who plays David Falk?
That is Chris Messina.
Okay. Who's Chris Messina? Because I don't know him. Because he's good in this movie too.
You don't think he's a little much at times?
I think David Falk probably was a little much. Imagine Michael Jordan's agent.
That's true. And he's 34.
Right. So
young guy.
I imagine he was a little much.
He's best known for the Mindy Project, but he's been in a bunch of like smaller or movies that I don't know if you know, like Julie and Julia.
He steps into the cage with
Argo.
He steps in the cage with all these big hitters, and he's hitting bombs.
He doesn't shy away, and he has to play kind of the biggest, most dynamic role, if you will. So he doesn't shy away.
I guess
away.
The only difference is he isn't on screen with them much.
Right.
He's on the phone a lot.
On the phone.
Yeah.
He doesn't share a scene with anybody else.
Well, he does. He goes to dinner with Damon, doesn't he?
No. Remember, he's eating dinner alone.
Oh, that's right.
At the very end of the movie.
And but he does. He is in on the meeting at the end.
That's true. That's a good point. Right. He's in.
No, they have dinner. Him and Damon. Damon goes to his office. Damon goes to his office early in the movie, and he's like, I can't remember the exact scene. Damon goes to his office, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? It's going to be Nike, or it's going to be at Converse.
I thought it was over the phone, but all right.
Is it over the phone?
It was over the phone. Yeah, you're slowing down in your old age, huh? A couple of missteps there.
You think Jerry Maguire doesn't have a soul.
I know he doesn't. No, this movie is exactly what I hoped it would be in more. I know some people were disappointed. Like Che, I was talking with him a little bit. He doesn't love the movie as much.
Steve Che's an idiot.
He wants, but I think a lot of people did want some of that. It wasn't enough. They needed more from Sonny Vaccaro's character to really embrace this movie. I didn't need any more. I also love movies. Like, did you like Mad Men?
No.
Have you ever seen a television show?
Yes.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
No.
Why don't you watch these shows that people love?
Tried Breaking Bad, made it one episode.
Wasn't for you.
Didn't one for me. Watch one episode of Mad Men, boring as hell.
It is very slow. How about Sopranos?
That's to catch me. No.
So weird to me. It's weird. That's very strange.
Name another one.
The Wire.
Terrific.
Okay. If you like The Wire, you like a lot of these other.
Okay.
It's the same, like, brilliant television.
I know what these shows are.
All right.
I think. You have to explain to me.
Sopranos is fantastic. I mean, it's my favorite thing of all time.
I don't like mob movies. I don't like the mob. I that doesn't appeal to me. Mm. I don't like that stuff. So I like Goodfellas. It's fine. It's good, but it doesn't strike a chord at all, and I don't want to rewatch it. Like I don't like mob movies. What? What is fine?
You've never seen Godfather 2, right? You've seen only part one.
I've only seen part one, and didn't see it until like 2015.
It's just bizarre to me.
Why is the mob? The mob? Why?
They're just great movies. It's just great.
It's all the same thing.
It's not. And Sopranos.
Oh,
really
we can't trust him. Better whack him. Okay. Another guy got whacked. Everybody gets whacked. What's so fun in that? Maybe don't whack a guy every now and then. Oh, Joe Pesci gets mad at somebody.
Well, it's not Sopranos. Joe Pesci's not even in Sopranos, so. It's not. I mean, as much as I was excited to talk about Air, the more I realize it, it's like not that much to say about because the story is so compact.
There's not much.
Like, and so I was thinking, is it a perfect movie? So
all right, I'll say it like this.
Okay.
If you want to do that, you can.
I do. You interrupted me.
I want you to power rank these four based on their performances in this movie.
Table my conformation for later. Yeah, again. Yep. Power ranking.
You thought it was a perfect movie?
I was going to have that.
I think that's the last conversation we need to have.
Okay. All right.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, okay.
Was that, did Jay Leno make an appearance?
See what happened to you.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman. Ben Affleck. Chris Tucker.
Their performance in this movie alone?
Yeah. Because I think it goes, I think Matt Damon and Bateman are 1-2 in this. I don't think Affleck's 2. I think Bateman's 2.
Oh, no. I don't think, this is like, honestly, one of the small critiques I have, very small.
Yeah.
Affleck as Phil Knight doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I don't. Affleck doesn't really do it for me here either.
He's a particularly well written character either.
I think.
Is he stupid? Is he smart? Why does he change his mind halfway through?
I think Bateman's fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that take.
Bateman's good. Damon's obviously good.
Where do you put Viola Davis, though?
She's not in it that much.
She's in it more than Tucker is, isn't she?
Is she? Yeah, I guess she is. I would say equal. But I think Bateman, Damon, and Affleck are in it more than anybody, right?
Yeah.
And actually, Messina's probably in it just as much as those other two.
A bit much. I Damon, number one by a mile, just because he...
You don't think Bateman...
He's the MVP of the movie.
You don't think Bateman's right there with him?
Bateman's the number two, right? I guess the next... Like, it's Damon, Bateman, Davis, and then a big drop.
Yeah, I would go...
Viola Davis is really good in this.
I think Tucker's good, too.
He's great, good. And yeah. The thing is, like, I'm saying, like, these are all really good performances. Even Ben Affleck is Phil Knight's not bad. In fact, I enjoyed it more the second time.
Have you ever, since we got this movie, 3 months ago... What other movies could they make, right? Like if they're making a movie about a watchable movie about Michael Jordan and signing with Nike, what could they make? There's so many things they could do. Because used to, a sports movie had to be The Miracle on Ice, or it had to be, you know, you have to go through a season with this team and go with the ups and downs. But if you think about it, the last great sports movie before this one, probably Moneyball, which was about putting together a team.
Uncut Gems.
It's borderline to me. Okay. But baseball, you know, Moneyball was about putting together a team in the back room. Mm-hmm. It was about that. And this is about signing a guy to a shoe contract. Like, I feel like there's so much untapped potential in the sports world that you could just pick out some.
There is, but you have to do it right. This movie could be so boring and so stupid. Yeah. This could have gone so many ways wrong than right.
Yeah.
Like the fact that this movie works is kind of a miracle.
I would agree with that. And if Affleck and Damon aren't steering the ship, it probably doesn't work.
And Alex Convery's script is incredible. I can't wait to see what this guy does next. That's a great first script.
What if he just never does it?
Maybe he does. Maybe it's the Gross Point Blank thing. Perfect movie argument. So Jaws to me is the ultimate. Have you seen Jaws?
I saw it as a kid. I haven't seen it in years. I saw it as a kid. I haven't seen it in years. What do you want me to do? Jaws is a perfect movie.
Jaws is a perfect movie. It's nothing wrong with it. Even Godfather has a.
I think if we're just talking perfect movies, I think Back to the Future.
Could be. Features there as well.
Back to the Future has no flaw.
Yes. Well, I mean, you could say the core of the movie is a flaw. The mom wants to fuck the son, but I don't believe that. I think the movie itself.
I think Jaws is a perfect movie.
Yes.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong. Even Godfather has the scene when Sonny's fighting his brother-in-law and he's like fake. He's like missing the punches. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Air is not nearly as good of a movie as the ones we're talking about.
Right.
But is it in the story he's trying to tell and what he's doing? Is it perfect? It's pretty close.
Well, the problem you can't put Air in the mix with those is Air is weightless, right? Air is weightless. I mean, there's no heft to it. There's nothing. It's not meat that's going to stick to your bones, right? It's just an hour and 40 that you're going to really enjoy, and I can't really compare it to those.
Yeah, right. That's fair.
No, but there's not much. I can't really ding this movie for very much.
No.
I think it's a terrific movie, and it maximizes what you could get out of this subject.
Right.
But this subject can't produce perfection.
I agree.
How about that?
Right. Right.
That makes sense?
It does. MVP of the movie?
Oh, it's Damon.
Yeah.
It's Damon.
No question.
Now, you brought up a great, I mean, say, throw out time frame, throw out generations, put Cruise here, put Damon there. Which movie hurts more? I think Cruise maybe could have done this.
I mean, Cruise is the perfect Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, Cruise is the perfect Jerry Maguire. Matt Damon could pull off Jerry Maguire better than Cruise is pulling off.
I agree with you.
Vaccaro.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Huh.
Really crafted film. I'm gonna give this a 92. I think it's
the closest we've ever been.
What are you gonna give it?
91.
All right, how about that, huh?
I go 90 for Jerry Maguire, 91 for Air.
I'd say 81 and a 91.
I'm surprised.
81, 92, excuse me.
Yeah, I think 81 for Jerry Maguire is pretty criminal.
I think it's right on point. By the way, I checked the movierankings.net to see, and Jeff D. Lowe and Ken Jack agree. It's 80. They give it an 80.
So. I don't care about Jeff D. Lowe.
Mm.
What do they know about movies?
Right.
What do they know about anything?
And I also said, so we got three people that know a lot about movies that all agree. You're the one on the outside looking in. You're the simplistic mind. The simple hillbilly wants to believe that people can change.
If I can change, you can change.
That's right.
Everybody can change.
That's right.
Next week?
We are back with football movies.
Going to the gridiron, huh?
Woohoo! Are we ever? Remember the Titans and?
Rudy.
That's right.
Zoo movies. Before we go, what's your experience with Remember the Titans and Rudy?
The Titans we talked about on the...
Oh, we did one of these for Remember the Titans.
Dodging
and we didn't air.
No one.
What's your experiences with both these movies?
Rudy, I didn't see in the theaters. I
didn't either.
I got the DVD like very early on.
I didn't see either of these in the theaters, Rudy.
I didn't see either in the theaters either. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to do Remember the Titans, which is beloved, and Rudy, which is beloved.
Yes.
We'll see.
By different generations, right? Rudy's more like our generation. Remember the Titans a little bit younger.
I mean, they were, no. I mean, Remember the Titans is pretty much our generation too. It came out in 2000. Came out 23 years ago.
Yeah, I guess I feel like it's because it's Disney. It's more for like younger people.
Yeah, but it came out 23 years
that
ago.
That came out. Yeah, but we were 20. Were you like neither of us saw it in the theater? So was it even marketed?
I didn't see it in the theaters. I don't remember what it was marketed to. I don't. It's weird. If I didn't see a movie in theater, I just don't really remember it coming out at all.
It's crazy to see this. That's wild.
I don't. It's not that I didn't see it, Clemmer. I don't remember it existing.
That's weird.
In the theaters. I don't remember it being an option. And I can remember everything about that.
Did you like the Oscars at all back then or no?
I don't give a shit about the Oscars then, now, forever. No, I don't give a shit about the Oscars. The Oscars aren't real.
I wish you would appreciate who wrote and directed.
The Oscars aren't real.
You should appreciate that more. Because it's going to make you like movie. Because if you like that director, chances are you.
They looked at a year with fucking Jerry Maguire and that other movie and said, you know what, the best movie is The English Patient.
That's true.
Fuck you.
Well, you know the right take is.
What is Shakespeare in Love beat?
Oh, I forget now. Yeah,
but I mean, come on.
I mean, the thing is though, they get the nominations right. Typically, they just don't get the
winner
right. So if you kind of take that look at it,
Shakespeare in Love, I think it beat The Truman Show was in there.
Get nominated.
Saving Private Ryan. It beat Saving Private Ryan.
That's what it was.
It beat Saving Private Ryan. All right.
Spielberg won Best Director.
I'm mad. Let's get out of here.
Right. All right.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Back next week.